What's up, Beardos? You're listening to a ridiculously ruinous bonus episode of The Bearded Vegans.
Basically, our whole philosophy boils down to don't be a jerk.
Don't let me answer your question first. I'm not answering your question. I really hope people didn't tune in to hear us talking about beards.
Welcome to the show. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, that would be weird, but you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com, and you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's Patreon-exclusive bonus episode, we're going to talk about what we've been eating, and then Adam Ruins Going Green.
Paul, I really want to use that title. I don't know if we're really going to ruin this episode in the same way that Adam Ruins Everything ruins and explores topics, like go through point by point and sort of break things down necessarily. But I did feel like maybe there's some issues with how this particular episode chose to look at this particular topic. And it was listener submitted, so I figured we would oblige on that because this is a little different from our usual fare.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely, while not vegan-centric, I feel like it's tangentially related to the issues that we talk about. Certainly, we've talked about the environmental issues before, and this is going deep into that. And Andy, I do think it's going to be fun to kind of pick apart some of this episode. It's only about 20 minutes long, so it's pretty short, in the same way that we pick apart a lot of the movies that we watch.
Yes, absolutely.
So, Andy, before we get into that, though, let me hear about what you've been eating.
Well, Paul, I decided, you know, I had a little bit of time between the Atlantic City Vegan Food Fest and my next event, which is in Compassion Fest in Connecticut. And I figured it'd be fun to take a little trip to mid-upstate New York to, like, the Albany area. And today I made a stop in New Paltz. And I did so because I really wanted to go to Lagusta's Luscious Commissary, which I feel like I must have mentioned on the show at some point before. But Lagusta's makes these amazing chocolates. I think they're just some of the best chocolates out there. But there's also the commissary, which serves savory food and coffee and drinks and some ice cream and things like that. And on Tuesdays, they always have some sort of dinner special, which is usually a ramen. And the pictures always look so good, but it's a Tuesday in an area that I'm just rarely at on a Tuesday. But just so happens that I was here on this Tuesday, and I looked it up online to see what they were serving. And instead of the ramen, as I expected, they were serving a kimchi udon noodle dish. And Paul, are you a kimchi fan at all?
I'd say I'm a kimchi fan.
I am not a kimchi fan. And so I was a little disappointed because it's just not a flavor profile that really does it for me. But I was like, pretty much everything Lagusta's does is really good. So I've never been disappointed. Let me try this anyway. Just give it a shot. And I got it, and it did not disappoint. It was not super heavy on the kimchi flavor, but it was there and it was present. And there was some large pieces of the, I believe, cabbage, right? That's the base of kimchi.
Yeah, yeah.
Some large chunks of that mixed in with this noodles and this kind of like creamy, spicy, buttery kind of sauce. And then in the middle of it, I don't know exactly what this is, but it's like a vegan egg yolk of some kind. And it actually is in like a little clear, like bubble, like sack kind of thing. So you break it open with your chopsticks and it oozes out, and then you mix it up with your noodles. And I can't necessarily discern if it really added much flavor to the dish, but it certainly was a fun interactive thing to do with my food. And it was just such a delight. I'm also just so very full from it right now, Paul. So if I'm a little lethargic on this recording, that is the reason why.
It did look, I saw the video you posted breaking open the bubble with the chopstick, breaking open that egg bubble, and it did look, it took a good picture, that's for sure.
Yeah, it definitely took a good picture. So that's Lagusta's Luscious Commissary in New Paltz, New York. Unique New York.
New Paltz, New York.
And I would definitely recommend, I was so full that I did not pick up one of the like peanut butter ice cream bars that they make, which I had at Vegan Dale last year. And it was so delicious, but I was just way too full and I knew I would be like super stuffed for this recording. So I did not get one of those, but they open at 8 a.m. So I might swing by and get a little ice cream bar breakfast.
Nice. Nice. Andy, I'll be there next week. So you can look forward to my review, I guess, on the main podcast in a couple weeks.
Will you be there on a Tuesday, though?
Negative.
Ooh, well, you can still get the mac and cheese anytime. And I like that they like crunch up like rice crackers and bake the mac and cheese. And that's, I think it's pretty good. Huh. So, yeah, I'm looking for, have you ever been there before?
I've not been to that one. I've just had the chocolate in New York City, but I've never had like the food before.
In unique New York?
Yep, that's correct.
Well, yeah, doing really good things. I like the vibe of the shop, and I always look forward to trying what Lagusta creates. And I was really excited to be there on Tuesday. So, Paul, anything delicious go in that mouth of yours since the Atlantic City Vegan Food Fest?
I don't think so. You know what? Andy, you know what I did have? I stopped at a Burger King in Baltimore and got that Impossible Whopper.
Oh, the Impossible Whopper, huh?
Yeah, it was quite good. I was stoked at how cheap it was because, you know, some of these restaurants, you're getting Impossible Burgers for $13, $14, $15. So it was like $5.50, I think, which was only about a dollar more expensive than the normal Whopper anyways. So that's cool. Also, the shout outs to the I guess it was the manager at the Burger King, I think, who was like, because who heard us saying, oh, no, like no cheese, no mayo, please. And the manager was like, oh, are you two vegan? And like made sure that we knew that, like how everything was vegan and stuff. Seemed very knowledgeable. And I just appreciated the extra reassurance that I was in fact getting the Impossible Burger, because if it had not been for that and I had eaten this burger, I might have been like, uh-oh, did I just get a regular Whopper? Despite it being wrapped in that good Impossible wrapping.
Yeah, that is reassuring. I actually had some Impossible sliders earlier today from White Castle, and they were shaped square this time. And I feel like every time I go and get one of those things, it's shaped differently, and I'm never sure if they're giving me actual cow's flesh or not. Took a couple taste tests to determine it was in fact the Impossible Whopper.
Well, yeah,
the Impossible slider.
It's tough because, oh, is White Castle selling the Impossible Whopper now? It's tough because, like, I know at White Castle, they're like molding it themselves, I think. So I feel like you're getting a different shape every single time. Some of them probably care more about making it that classic found in nature square burger shape than others. Yeah, because whenever I've got it, it hasn't been the most pretty, but still good.
You know, Paul, you've mentioned the found in nature square shape many times, but I was thinking today on my hike, because I don't know why this popped into my head, but I'm like, the shape of a cow's flesh burger, that's like not a natural shape for that flesh to exist in.
It's not, I suppose, but someone at some point decided burgers are going to be circular and no other shape.
They're going to be disc shaped.
Yeah. someone had to decide that.
Yeah, that's true. I guess they had a committee meeting at some point. But Paul, I do agree, the price of the Impossible Whopper, I think for all of the, you know, critiques and misgivings that people have about this thing at being at Burger King, when I went, I was able to get a full meal for like $8, I think. And I was just thinking how I've been to some places that charge upwards of $16 to $18 just for the Whopper, or just for the it's in my lexicon now, just for the Impossible Burger, not even with fries sometimes. You know, I've sat there and paid like $22 to $24 for like a full meal at some other places. So the fact that this is becoming, I would say, wildly more accessible price-wise because of Burger King, I think it'll be really interesting to see if people that are not interested in it previously, if they'll give it a shot just because the price point is now lower than it has previously been.
Also, one of the employees was wearing this nice teal Impossible Whopper hat, and another one was wearing a nice teal Impossible Whopper shirt, and I was like, oh, where can I get me one of those hats?
Well, Paul, if you get that hat, maybe it can accompany your new Tofurky shoes that you'll hopefully win.
I know. Tofurky did an online giveaway of Vans Tofurky brand shoes, I guess. And I'm really, really crossing my fingers, hoping I get those.
That would be the most on-brand footwear you could possibly wear, Paul.
Except if it was just Tofu has sponsored Vans to make Tofu shoes.
Or if you took the like actual Tofurkies and hollowed them out and just stuck your feet in them.
Gross.
All right, Andy. Paul.
Let's
get things back on track here. Normally we do this nice little, all right, let's get to our review of Adam Ruins Everything and then play the trailer. I don't believe there's a trailer for an episode of a show. So we're going to go ahead and skip that formality. But for anyone that's not familiar, Adam Ruins Everything is a show that airs on True TV, and a number of episodes are also now available on Netflix. So if you have Netflix, you can go watch this episode. As Paul mentioned, it's 24 minutes total. So it's a quick watch. I would say a very breezy and entertaining watch as well. So I would say hit pause, go watch that, come back and join us for the conversation. Paul, were you familiar with Adam Ruins Everything prior to watching this episode? Had you ever seen even like a YouTube clip of the show before?
You know, I had never actually seen the show itself, but I've seen tons of like promo images and maybe commercials for it. And I don't know how I've avoided seeing it or any clips from it, but yeah, I had never seen it before, but I was definitely aware of its presence. And it's funny that I haven't watched it yet because it's like, I do like the premise. Although spoiler alert, Andy, I'm not sure after watching this episode, if I want to watch any more episodes.
Because you feel like it was such a thorough takedown of something that you hold dear and you'll find it upsetting to watch more episodes, or because you felt this takedown was maybe a little wonky?
I thought that it was a little wonky.
Yeah. So, Paul, this show follows in the grand tradition of a show that I used to love watching way back in the day, Penn and Teller's Bullshit, which I believe that's another show you have not seen, right?
Correct.
And that was basically the same premise. Like, beloved comedians, Penn and Teller would take
comedians.
One topic and magicians?
Yeah. I would say first and foremost, magicians over comedians.
Fair enough. I misspoke, but they are also comedians in addition to there's comedy in their act.
I suppose.
All right. Let's leave that in. Let's go light on the editing for the bonus eps here. But beloved magicians and part-time comedians, Penn and Teller, had this show, and they would take one topic and then they would just sort of dive into it. And they did one on like why recycling is bullshit and why, you know, whatever is bullshit. They actually did an episode, Paul. I would be really curious to see if we could get our hands on this and do this as maybe like a follow-up bonus episode. They did an episode on why PETA specifically is bullshit.
Well, also, I thought you were going to say if they did one specifically on recycling too, because that's something that was definitely touched upon in the beginning of this episode.
Well, we should definitely revisit those things, because the recycling one really stuck out to me, because essentially from what I remember, and I haven't seen this since I want to say 2006 or 7 or something like that, but the conclusion that always kind of stuck with me was that at that point in time, recycling aluminum cans was a good thing, but the environmental cost of recycling plastics and so many other things, paper, etc., it was actually like worse for the environment to use up all of that energy and the, you know, carbon output, whatever, of the factories to turn those things into reusable items to like repurpose them than it would be to just throw those items away. And they said this figure that was essentially like, if you, and I totally don't remember the exact amount of years, but basically they're like, listen, if you dug a 1 mile cubed hole in the ground and you filled it with our trash, it would take like thousands of years to fill that, like all of the trash in the US or all of the trash in humanity or something like that. And so it's basically one of those things where like, you think recycling's good, but actually it's not good. And in fact, we could continue to just throw things away and it would be fine. And, it was really interesting because like as a thought experiment, I was like, oh, that's something to think about. But it also doesn't account for the fact that maybe the cost of recycling plastic environmentally could get better over time. Or maybe it would be impossible for everyone to put all of their garbage in a place that brings it to this 1 mile cubed like hole in the ground, which is like something that we obviously seen like borne out, that we have like the plastic garbage patch and we just see like garbage everywhere. And there's all this footage of like rivers filled with garbage all over the world. And so you're like, oh, God. So these, like, in theory, these seem like good things or like interesting ways to think about it, but they don't actually apply over to like the practical application of how humans actually act. And so they did one on PETA as well. And I remember, I think I must have been a baby vegan at that point. And they were critiquing it from totally different angles than you and I would critique it from. And at points, they even sort of conflated PETA with veganism in general. So I think those would both be pretty interesting episodes to watch as a follow-up to this particular discussion. But anyway, enough about Penn & Teller. Paul, this episode starts with a dad and a daughter going out for a picnic, and the daughter throws some trash on the ground, and the dad starts talking about how it's important to recycle. Adam comes along, Adam Conover, the host of the show, comes along and is like, well, actually, all of the things that you know about going green are probably not that good, and then proceeds to sort of go through point by point. I would say sort of cherry picking specific instances in which things that people think they would do to go green are not actually that effective. So I guess, Paul, before we really get into the specifics, what was your general impression of this episode?
Well, I guess my general impression was that until the last maybe 2 minutes of the episode, it was all kind of like, oh, you thought that this was a good thing that you were doing wrong. You thought that this was a good thing that you were doing wrong. And it never really gave, like, instead of doing this, you should be doing this until the last, like, 2 minutes of the episode. So the whole thing just kind of left me feeling like, all right, well, it's just this guy kind of, like, poo-pooing on everything and not giving any, like, instead of this, you should do this. And some of the stuff, you know, some of the stuff he would say, like, oh, no, don't do this. So then the person would be like, OK, so I'll do the opposite instead. And then he'd be like, well, actually doing that's just as bad, too. And I feel like is that really like a productive conversation to be like, everything you do is going to be terrible, which even if in some cases that's the truth, like we've dug ourselves this mile deep trash hole that we're currently living in. And it's like, if it may be true that we've kind of dug ourselves into this place where everything that we're doing has some sort of negative impact on the environment, but then still shouldn't you say, okay, well, I'm going to try to do the thing that's the least detrimental, instead of just being like, well, everything is bad, so just like you kind of can't do anything good. And that's kind of the impression that I got throughout the whole episode until, like I said, the last 2 or 3 minutes where he was like, oh, and these are things that you actually can do. So I feel like for me, it just created like a negative vibe.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I would even say that even in the last couple of minutes, it feels like the things that they say that you should do felt unsatisfactory to me. It didn't really feel like it didn't leave me with a sense of hope, even though they're like, there is things to be hopeful for. And I can't imagine that the average person that hasn't really thought about these issues much before would also leave with a sense of hope. So I guess I'll say what I did think was really interesting was the beginning of the episode, in which they talk about the fake ad featuring a fake Native American who is actually apparently an Italian man. Paul, I'm sure you appreciated the Italian hands that happened at that point.
That's wild. I did not know that.
Yeah, that blew my mind. And then the fact that this whole, like, I did not know that up until the 50s that people had to just return the bottles that they drank things out of and they would get washed and reused again. Like, that blows my mind. And it gives me like perspective on things that sometimes when we're just in the middle of something and living something, we just sort of take for granted that there could be a totally different system of how things could work. And this is like one of those moments where I was like, oh, like I did not even think about the possibility that the solution to all of the plastic bottles that are thrown away is that companies should actually put them in like reusable glass bottles or something that have to get returned. To me, I was like, what? That's a thing that could happen?
Yeah, no, for sure. And I feel like it's like that, relatively speaking, that was not happening that long ago, that these companies were using these reusable bottles. And it just, it almost seems to me like, I mean, obviously these huge, huge companies are just like ever greedy for more money, so they would never do this. But it just seems to me like they have so much money and they're controlling like such a large portion of the wealth. It's like, how much would it really, I guess at this point they have all these manufacturers and stuff like that, so they would never do it anyways. But it's like, how much would it really cost them to go back to that system and like reach it or like change it to something else, you know? But I mean, not that they, it's like not that they actually care about these things, but yeah, Andy, it did, like the beginning was certainly, it was incredibly interesting how it basically points out how the, like the green movement as a whole was created by these huge corporations to kind of shift the blame away from the corporations and onto the individual and make it seem like, oh, like, it's our job to help this problem, to like to not litter and to recycle and all these things. It makes it our issue and not the issue of who's actually causing the problem, which is these big corporations. And I did find that fascinating.
Yeah, and I think, Paul, we've recently been sort of wrestling with that idea. I'm thinking about of you know, individual responsibility versus, I guess, collective responsibility, even versus corporate responsibility, and I guess structural responsibility perhaps is maybe a better way to put it. And, you know, like we have been generally very favorable towards activism that's like about convincing or informing individuals to make changes in their lives. And it's, you know, related to this podcast, like going vegan specifically. And then, you know, we had that interview with Jake Conroy that was kind of saying that, like, well, actually, I think that's sort of backwards. I think that it's all well and good to, you know, we should have people that are working on influencing individuals. But ultimately, if we can just affect the corporations, the individuals won't even have to make that choice. And this is a really good example of that way of looking at it. Like, well, if the corporations switch back to the way where people had to return their bottles, people wouldn't have it. I guess they could throw it out. But it seems like as far as that model was working, it seems like it actually was working to some degree. And so this does seem like one of those things where it's like, oh, maybe the best option is to actually go back to that and put the responsibility on the producers of these products. And so I thought, like, the beginning of this episode to me showed a lot of promise, because this is still something that I struggle with constantly. Like, how much importance should we put on individual change versus systemic change? And can you actually have one without the other? Like, it sounds well and good to just be like, well, let's just destroy these corporations or convince them to change and the individuals don't have to do anything. But then I'm like, if there isn't some sort of general sense among the public that they want this change, like, how could that support the big corporate change or laws change or anything like that? So I was like, okay, all right, Adam Ruins Everything. Like, this is really interesting. And I'll say I've really enjoyed a lot of episodes of this show. And, you know, a lot of them have those eye-opening moments where you're like, where it talks about, you know, there's one all about the wedding industry. And it talks about how it was like this one, like Zales or whatever, convinced everyone that they should have a diamond ring. And then now we're like, that's the symbol. But like 100 years ago, no one cared about that. Like, that wasn't a symbol. So it kind of started out keeping in that tradition. But from there, I feel like the episode really just sort of went downhill. And you know, then it kind of switches to talking about like the electric car situation.
Yeah, you know, Andy, I do want to give some of the other episodes a shot, because I feel like if the topic wasn't something that was so enormous and such a big thing, I mean, all of them seem like big things, but this just seems like this existentially large issue that you already feel like, oh, there's nothing, like, what can I even do about this? And then this show comes along and be like, oh, you think that the little things that you are doing are good? Like, nope, just kidding. Those are terrible. And maybe I would like other episodes like like a wedding industry type one, where it's like, that seems like something where, okay, if I find out about this thing and disagree with it, then I could just not participate in this thing or certain aspects of this thing. Like with those issues, it seems like there's more that you can do on an individual level. But with this issue, it just seems like shooting down all the things that you can do on an individual level just makes it seem just even more miserable than it actually is. And Andy, like you were saying, it's like in the beginning, it kind of does seem like it seems like it's setting it up to give you a solution on some things that you can do to help with this like systemic level issue. But then at the end, when they actually do give the solutions, it's just kind of like, you know, like organize and get other people to care. Like, you care about this, so like organize and get other people to care about this. It's not really any like tangible things that it gives, you know?
Are you trying to tell me that thoughts and prayers aren't tangible, Paul?
But
raising awareness isn't tangible.
I mean, it's like, so I don't know. It left me feeling more sad. Like, especially, I'll tell you, Andy, I feel like I almost started tearing up when the scene when it's like, when the I forget who the dad that's throughout the episode, I forget what his name is, but throughout the whole episode, or at towards the end of the episode, when there's the scientist that's basically like, oh yeah, we already have enough fossil fuels and resources saved up to like raise the temperature by 2 degrees five times over, and the guy's like, oh, so what, like what are we gonna, like, when's that going to happen? And he says something like, oh, well, it's not going to happen. We're not going to see it happen. And it just like zooms in on the daughter, like the baby daughter. And it's mm-hmm. just like, shit, like everything is going to shit. And the people who are perpetrating this aren't even going to be alive to see the outcomes of their terrible deeds. And it just made me really sad.
Yeah, it was very depressing. And then, it was very depressing. And specifically that fact that you pointed to when they're like, we've already extracted, as a globe, 5 times the amount of fossil fuels needed to bring us past that, you know, 2 degree tipping point. And to give up that oil would mean countries losing out on trillions of dollars. And saying that right there, I was like, okay, so then that's literally never going to happen. You know, that amount of money is like an unfathomable amount of money. And I can't imagine anything that would convince anyone to give up that money in the name of the greater good. So that was like really depressing. And then the moments when he is like, but there is hope, it almost just felt like hand wavy, like there's hope. Haha. You know, but like I didn't really feel a sense of hope that was actually instilled in me.
Yeah, Andy, it just kind of feels like they needed to put in something at the end that was like positive, and they were just kind of like grabbing for metal, non-plastic straws.
Yeah, certainly not straws made from precious metals extracted from the earth, Paul.
Yeah. I know. I'm surprised. I feel like maybe, I don't know when that episode came out, but there was no mention of straws. So the straw thing probably, like the plastic straw ban epidemic probably didn't happen at this point. But if that did happen, you know, there would have been something that said like, oh, well, I use a metal straw. And then yes, he would have been like, well, actually metal straws are the cause of deaths of 10 trillion people.
Yeah. I was looking up articles to see if anyone had done like a debunking of this. And I came across an interview, or not an interview, but like an article that they wrote in response to Vox wrote a piece that was all about how they thought that this episode got the electric car thing totally wrong. And so it was Adam Ruins Everything's, like their writing staff's whatever, response to that article. And in it, they mention President-elect Trump. So this is definitely at least a few years old, because it was before Trump had unfortunately taken office, but after he had quote-unquote won the election. So yeah, the straw ban hysteria had not come at that point. But so Paul, the electric car thing, to bring it back to that, I mean, it's interesting because I have read that before, that like basically because of the resources that it takes to like physically make the car, as well as like the energy to make the car, that really it's probably better for you to just keep whatever car you have until it breaks down and you like absolutely have to get a new car, like to just ditch it and then go and buy an absolutely new car, which makes sense, you know, like creating anything requires resources. But then I was just kind of dubious about how it's basically saying that the energy that powers that car, you're just shifting it from fuel to coal. And they kind of offhandedly dismiss, but, you know, but soon all energy will be renewable, which, you know, they're like, that's not going to happen for a really long time. And your car will probably break down before that actually happens. I don't know. I guess, again, it just feels like one of those things that is like really dismissive and isn't, like when people say, but animals are killed in the harvesting of crops right now. And you're like, well, you think we couldn't find ways to help those animals if we had a world that valued animals? I don't know. Did you feel like okay with that justification, or am I totally off base here?
Well, there was two parts. One part you mentioned that was saying, oh, well, we're not there yet type thing. But to me, I was thinking like, well, if no one does this, then we'll never get there. Yeah. You know, and it's like just because we're not there right now, like you were just saying with the vegan analogy, it's like, yeah, there are animals that are killed in the harvesting of crops. But if we got to a place of veganism where more people adopted that ethic, then I have no doubt then more people would be putting the time and energy and thought into how to solve that problem. And I think I would guess it's the same thing with this energy thing. I'm sure now, even though the world is not all using solar energy, the entire world's not using solar energy or wind energy or what have you, there are for sure more people thinking about that, more people developing those things than there were when solar energy or wind energy was first, you know, put forward. And if the people, again, the people poo-pooed on it from the beginning and said, well, no one's like, here's these issues with these things, so we should never use them. Then it's like, if you stopped, cut the development off right there, then you wouldn't have like as many people thinking about it. So that's why, yeah, that logic I wasn't super keen on. And then the other thing was with, when they say, oh, well, you're actually just switching from fossil fuels to coal. I think they said like, well, actually, like some of these places are using coal. So I feel like it wasn't even like you're definitely switching from fossil fuel to coal. It was like it's possible. And again, that just kind of seems like, well, it seems like there were a few points in the show where it's like you're just looking for, you're not, it's not like I'm not going to say it's not a real issue because it is an issue, but it's like you're specifically searching out the things to be negative about. And I feel like that's not super constructive. And Andy, there's no bigger culprit than that, than when he dismisses walking.
Well, Paul, before you get into that, let me just say something that I was reading about, which is essentially that there are about like five or six states that are still very coal heavy. And otherwise, it's not necessarily assured that you'd be switching from like fossil fuel or like gasoline to coal. And that's something they acknowledge in their response piece to the Vox thing. We'll put links to that in the show note. But, you know, it's just like one of those things that's like they could have acknowledged that because they're doing all these things. They're like, but the zippers and the bananas, and they could have just easily mentioned like, so if you're in Virginia, you'll actually probably be switching to coal. But if you're in California, you'll probably be switching to electric. And these, you know, like these things matter. And it's just weird for a show that was so seemingly so thorough and list all of their sources that they wouldn't throw that in. And they just sort of instead choose to make it blanketedly seem like that they're just saying you're switching to coal if you do this. You know, if like you said, it feels like they're just really looking for the negative. And I feel like they kind of cover their asses by throwing in most cases or like most of the time or generally speaking, like they throw those in there. So it allows rooms for like a little exceptions to exist so that they can't be fully held to the statements that they're making. But in general, it does feel like they're so hell bent on their final conclusion of why most of the things people do to go green are bad, that they're sort of ignoring points that they could be making that would actually help people make these decisions. You know, and it's, and like, again, I think that like the general point that they're trying to make, which is like, yeah, we should be doing these good things and use the reusable stuff, but we can't buy our way out of this problem. There's more to it than that. But it just feels like they're so hellbent on making it seem like it's a hopeless scenario and to shoot down every possible alternative that people might have, that they're missing a chance to actually inform people on things they could do.
Yeah, it's just it, Andy, I think my main critique with this episode, and I imagine that this is probably what the rest of the show is like. I can't say for sure, but my main critique is that it's like, it's so clear, it's so obvious that they knew what they wanted to prove, and then they went out and sought out facts to prove their point. Like, they wanted to show from the beginning that individuals trying to make changes to go, quote, go green was bad and in fact like detrimental to what they were trying to do. But it's like, it's 2019. You can go on the internet and find, no matter what your stance is, you can find, you know, quote, evidence to back up like your claims, no matter what they are. And a lot of the things that they were citing were like, because they would always, you know, have like a little citation thing at the top, and they were citing, you know, like Vice, and I don't know, they were citing a lot of like news outlets rather than scientific sources. Like, occasionally they would cite NASA or something like that, and I feel like it's hard to like screw around with NASA data. But it's like, when you're citing the New York Times or when you're citing Vice, it's like, how do I know they're not just citing an opinion article or something like that? And I guess, again, it just really seems like they already knew what they wanted to prove before they had any evidence for it. And then they went ahead and found the evidence for it. And I just feel like that's an irresponsible way of doing something, of making something that's trying to convince someone about something. It's like, I feel like it's irresponsible to already know what you want to prove before you have the evidence to prove it.
Yeah, I agree entirely. And I think it's a bummer because, again, I think that the main points that they're trying to make are really important. And it just feels like they maybe just didn't have enough material to fill up 24 minutes. So they're really just kind of throwing a lot of things at the wall that sound convincing to someone that's maybe like half listening to the episode. But I don't know. I mean, I part of me wants to say, well, this is an issue that you and I have thought about a little bit more than most people just by virtue of doing this podcast, and you have to think about environmental stuff. But like, really, not a lot of it has to do with veganism or vegetarianism. I mean, vegetarian they mentioned briefly in this episode, but so it's almost not even like, oh, we know so much about this already that that's why we can poke holes in it. Like, I feel like the average person could watch this and be like, I don't know about these conclusions, or I don't know about, like, Paul, I'm sure this is a big thing for you as a math teacher. You need them to show their work, and they're not showing their work.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess, you know, we're probably trying to wrap this episode up, but like the two biggest things where I was like, who's buying this was when they were, like I teased before, when he was critiquing walking and saying, well, if you walk instead of driving, you're going to walk to a burger place and eat that burger, and you're using the burger to fuel you, but the production of the burger is more costly than the energy that you burned. And I was like, the average person in America is not like eating the exact amount of food that they are then burning throughout the day. So it's like, to say that, like, by walking to a burger place, it's like the person would probably just drive to a burger place if they weren't walking to the burger place, in which case then they'd be doing not double the damage, but they'd be doing more damage. And it's just like, to say, I don't know, that argument was just so strange, and it was only topped by the even more absurd argument that you shouldn't eat bananas because the zipper of the driver of the coffee who delivers the coffee to the corporate place, that zipper is made out of metal. It's just like, come on. Like, that's such a bad argument to make against something.
Yeah, Paul, this was the section that when I saw, I said, All right. I think we could probably talk about this episode. Paul, the takedown of walking just feels like they're trying to be edgelords. Like, they're just trying to have something really controversial to say. Because, like you said, I think people are going to eat what they're going to eat. And with the exception of, I'm going to say, like extreme, or not even extreme, but like athletes and, you know, weightlifters and things like that, where people are really conscious of the fact that they like need to get a certain amount of calories in. I feel like the average person is eating whatever they're going to eat, regardless of whatever level of physical activity they have. If it's just like a trivial, like, walk to the burger place, you know, like, even me today on my hike, I did this like 6 mile hike or something like that, but I didn't go, oh, I better eat a crap ton more calories before that. Like, maybe I slammed a Soylent when I got done with it to replenish my body, but it's not like a thing where people are paying attention to that math. And it just felt like, how can we make walking seem bad? Oh, if someone goes and eats the most environmentally destructive food possible to get calories to do that. And then they try to go, oh, but we're going to anticipate the vegan or vegetarian objection. And so we're going to cherry pick a vegetable that's incredibly, it has a huge carbon footprint, as opposed to talking about like eating locally and in season. Like, they pay like the briefest of lip service to that. But they're just finding like the worst case scenario for all of these things. It's like, okay, well, what if you went to that burger place and got the Impossible Whopper? What if you went there and just got French fries? There's so many variables that they throw in there that they could throw in there that would totally change the outcome in the assessment. But instead, they're just like, nope, this one ingredient. Like, what if the person even ate chicken? Like, chicken's not better than eating vegetables in most cases, but it's still significantly better than eating a cow, environmentally speaking. And so they're just sort of like picking all these things as if that proves the rule. And it just seems really dishonest to me.
Yeah, and with the vegetables and stuff too, it's like they do bring up the point, which is valid, that if you're getting your produce shipped in from very, very far away, it's like, yeah, there are those, what is it called? Like the something miles?
Food miles?
Food miles, yeah. Like, it's like, yeah, it is taxing to have to ship things by plane. But then they kind of say, it's really difficult to make sure you're not buying things in season or that are local. And I feel like if you were someone that really wanted to just do that, I don't think it would be that difficult. Like, if you were someone that had the means to, I feel like it would require a minimal amount of research. I've seen like people sell posters that are like, this is the month and this is the stuff that's in season this month. And, or just like Google it really quickly, or just go to, I know not everyone has access to like local farms and stuff like that, but if you were someone that really, really wanted to do this, I feel like it wouldn't be that difficult. But they kind of dismiss it as like, oh, and it's really hard to just eat food that's in season or eat food that hasn't been shipped in. I feel like it wouldn't be.
I mean, I think it's definitely a challenge when you're used to a life where you can get raspberries from shitty ass Driscoll farms any time of the year. Maybe it's hard to like reacclimate yourself to that, or to get used to the fact that you can't have every food on demand at all times. But I think that the fact that they just sort of totally dismiss that is, to me, dishonest. But also, I mean, I guess they're trying to speak to the larger point of the one individual that goes off and like lives in the woods and grows all their own food, like, one person doing that, dozens of people doing that, doesn't make a difference. Like, we have to totally change the system. And I think that's like what they're trying to illustrate. But to me, it just fuels this desperation and confusion that people have, to the point where they're like, well, fine, I'm not going to do anything.
Yeah, no, I 100% think that many people would watch this, and then instead of taking in that last 2 minutes of the quote unquote hope that they're giving and saying like, oh, I am going to do something about this, I feel like most people would just become more apathetic towards the issue and be like, well, it's been confirmed that it's really not my problem. It's not my issue. I'm not the one that's causing this, so I'm not going to do anything about it.
And all I have to do is write my senator once about the Paris Climate Agreement, and I've done my part, because that's more important than anything that I do individually. And I don't know, Paul, for as much as I believe that systemic change is important, I think that it's also still, like, I don't think that we should use that as an excuse to dismiss our individual contributions to any number of horrific things. And just to be like, well, you know, iPhones, labor standards suck, but that's their problem. Like, what am I going to do on one person? You know, not to say like, oh, I'm like, everyone must give up their iPhones or else they're horrible environmentalists or whatever, or human rights violators. But it's like one of those things where it's like people use it to just brush off any individual responsibility that they might have, forgetting what impact they could have, even if it's just to inspire others to start to take action and stand up for the ethics and show some sort of backbone in the whole thing. And I get, Paul, that the whole line of thought that they go down from bananas to the zippers on the uniform of the person, it's kind of, you know, I think it's pointing to that classic phrase, there's no ethical consumption under capitalism. You know, this idea that like, oh, well, do you want to buy the product that slaughters animals, or do you want to buy the product that, you know, makes children forced into a life of slavery? Or do you want the one where the workers are paid 2 cents an hour? Or, you know, like, you're sort of choosing which horrific thing you want to support. And I get that. But I think that, like, even under the framework of there's no ethical consumption under capitalism, there's sort of like degrees of unethical. And I think that, like, as humans, if we have the option and the ability and the means, whatever it might be, I feel like it's still kind of our responsibility to try to take the action that's going to have the least amount of impact or contribute the least to the marginalization and oppression of other people. And I hate seeing that phrase being used to dismiss any sort of personal responsibility or people taking any sort of accountability for their own actions.
Yes. No, that's very well put, Andy. You know, I wonder, because we now know that this episode was made, you know, about 4 years ago, four-ish years ago, and I feel like 3 or 4 years.
Is Trump really being president that long?
Almost.
Ugh, God, so horrible.
And, you know, it's like, I do feel like even though the environment has always been, well, it's been a serious issue for the last handful of years since Al Gore brought it to our attention, you know, and, like, I feel like over the last 3 years, it has definitely ramped up a bit. I wonder if the episode would have been different if it was made now, especially and this Andy, this made me even more sad, was that they said, oh, but wait, there is some hope. Like, there's actually, like, all the countries met together and signed this treaty in Paris. And I was like, ooh, the U.S. is not in that deal. Like, the U.S. has since pulled out of that. And I was like, that just makes me even more sad that this is their one thing of hope. And now it's like not even applicable to the U.S. anymore.
And Paul, you know, I went and Googled for some opinions on how effective the Paris agreements were anyway, and found a plethora of articles basically on why it's kind of useless. A number of which were from sort of like right wing conservative sort of points of view, but definitely some from progressive points of view. This Politico article, Why the Paris Climate Deal is Meaningless. let me just read a little bit from that. Conventional wisdom holds that negotiators are hashing out a fair allocation of the deep emissions cuts all countries would need to make to limit warming. That image bears little resemblance to reality. In fact, emissions reductions are barely on the table at all. Instead, the talks are rigged to ensure an agreement is reached regardless of how little action countries plan to take. The developing world, projected to account for 4/5 of all carbon dioxide emissions this century, will earn applause for what amounts to a promise to stay on their pre-existing trajectory of emissions-intensive growth. Here's how that game works. The negotiating framework established at a 2014 conference in Lima, Peru, requires each country to submit a plan to reduce greenhouse gas emissions called an Intended Nationally Determined Contribution, INDC. Each submission is at the discretion of the individual country. There is no objective standard it must meet or emissions reductions it must achieve. Beyond that, it is nearly impossible even to evaluate or compare them. Developing countries actually blocked a requirement that plans use a common format and metrics. So an INDC need not even mention emissions levels. or a country can propose to reduce emissions off a self-determined, quote, business as usual trajectory, essentially deciding how much it wants to emit and then declaring it an improvement from the alternative. And there's just like dozens of articles about that. And like, obviously, it's better, even symbolically, that this agreement exists than doesn't. At least it's like sort of on the table and in the public conversation. But the fact that this episode leans so heavily on this agreement being so important, I find to be worrisome. I also found an article from National Geographic talking about how, you know, the agreements and the amount of emissions determined and all that stuff are not nearly enough to actually help us. So I don't know. It just, to me, that was even more depressing. And then, of course, as you mentioned, the fact that like Trump like got us out of that real quick. It does seem dire, and it does seem like, okay, so what is the takeaway for someone that wants to do something right now if they're just going to feel like anything they do is useless? And I get that the show does is like, no, like, still recycle. That's like good, but it's such a throwaway line. Yeah. You know, and I get that they don't want that to feel like the end all be all, like just change your light bulbs and you'll be fine. But it was so dismissive of those things that it would be easy for someone to feel like, well, I shouldn't do them because whatever, the zippers are made of zinc.
Yeah, it just really got me depressed, Andy. I'm bummed that we did this.
Sorry, Paul.
Do you got anything else you want to say about it?
No, I mean, I think that's pretty much it for me. I'm disappointed in this episode because I feel like in general, Adam Ruins Everything does pretty good work. Like, they did an episode on why, you know, breeding dogs is horrible for dogs, and you know, they've done some like really good pro animal stuff in the past, and this just feels like it's such a letdown. And I don't know, like, Paul, to have someone dismiss eating bananas and like going down that chain of thought, like, we've done that before. Like, okay, so you decide you're going to only buy food from vegan groceries, right? And so the money goes to the people that own that, and they're probably vegan, right? Maybe their employees are vegan, but then their employees go and they buy a shirt from Walmart, or they go and they buy a shirt from another, from like Tofurky. And I'm sure that like Tofurky's truck driver isn't vegan, and that's paying for animal slaughter. You know, like, you go down that rabbit hole, and it just, to me, it just leads to paralysis of action rather than people going, well, what can I really do that's going to be the most effective? Like, you just go down that hole and there's like no coming out of it. And you just ultimately throw your hands up in the air and you're like, well, fine, I'll send an email to my senator once a year.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really depressing.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's just such a bummer. Cause I feel like there could have been some really good points made, and the episode started off so strongly and really presented some stuff that I was like, wow, I had no idea about that guy, but
that dang Italian guy.
Yeah. I wish it did hammer home more on like, what can we do to ensure collective, like, corporate responsibility? What can we do to actually get corporations back to selling bottles that people have to return and wash and all that kind of stuff? I wish they went back to that point.
Yeah, or just spent longer on the instead of just the 2 minutes at the end about it, yeah, because it just kind of does give this hand wavy, like, oh yes, a call to action, but it doesn't really give tangible steps, which I feel like is not good.
Yeah, and there is the, sorry, I know you keep trying to wrap up, Paul, but there is the Adam Ruins Everything. They put their website up at the end. AdamRuinsEverything.com/goinggreen. And it brings you up to a page that's straight up just a call to action. And the steps are: speak out. Before we can address climate change, we need to spread the word about it. Tell your friends, followers, blah, 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 blah. Paris Agreement. Contact your elected officials is number 2. 3, give what you can. Organizations like the National Resources Defense Council and Union of Concerned Scientists do important work. So, like, donate, speak out, support science journalism, subscribe or donate to Science News, Climate Central, etc. And 5, divest. Divestment is the opposite of investment. There is a growing movement of people working to end financial support of the fossil fuel industry from colleges, blah, blah, you know. And it's like, okay, well, that's like an individual thing that people can do. And I don't know, it's just like all these things that I feel like as vegans, when we advocate, we're like, no, you can just personally stop contributing to all of this stuff right now. as opposed to like, no, you just need to sign this petition and you just, you know, it, to me, this kind of feels like the opposite of so much of what like vegan activism is based on.
Yeah.
You know, not that it would be bad if everybody did follow those things, but I mean, so I guess at least they're trying. And like, if you go to the website, there is like that list of concrete calls to action. So I appreciate that. But how many people are actually going to go to the website after they've been thoroughly depressed by said episode?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully some people do.
Yeah.
I hope it has a positive impact on some people.
Certainly not me, Paul.
Nor I.
All right. Well, let's wrap that up now. If you have any thoughts on this, you can leave a comment below on the Patreon. You can send us an email to thebeardvegans@gmail.com. And Paul, you know what we didn't do at the beginning of this episode?
Thank our Patreon subscribers.
That is correct. We were too depressed from this episode to think about showing gratitude towards anybody.
Yes, but thank you so much to everyone who does donate to the Patreon, and that's all of you listening to this, unless there's been a leak, Andy, unless there's been a breach in our Patreon. But no, you are probably the person that's donating, and we really appreciate it. It helps us out a lot, and it helps, you know, get the episodes transcribed. It helps whenever our equipment is faulty and breaks, and yeah, it helps keep us running. So thank you so much. We hope you enjoy these bonus episodes. We got a couple fun ones coming up soon, Andy. I think these are going to be the ones where we interview each other.
Yeah, we got to make that happen. You know, so we said that we had reached our third goal, and we announced that we'd be doing the interviews, the back and forth interview episodes. But as tends to happen, you know, a few people usually drop out right before they get charged. And so we like just barely missed that third goal. But a bunch of you have joined since then. I feel pretty good about the fact that once this month's charging period comes up, we will have actually hit that goal, and we will make these episodes happen. I'm really looking forward to getting the truth out of you, Paul.
Andy, some people just really didn't want those interviews to happen and unsubscribed from the Patreon because of it.
They were like, God, no, not more of these guys.
So yeah, let us know what you think. TheBeardedVegans@gmail.com, or you can comment below on the Patreon. And yeah, we want to hear your thoughts.
Well, my day, true to the title of the show, Paul, my day has been ruined by Adam. But I think that there's one thing that can pull me back from the brink of exasperation, and that is hearing you say the following 7 words.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off.
A listener asked us if we would give our take on this episode, and I think that there is some things to be said about the way that this episode looks at the world, and oh my God, there is a deer that just poked their head up like 10 feet from my van. This is amazing. Hold on, Paul. Oh, dear.
Literally, oh, dear.
Get this video.
And he's getting out his phone.
So comically close to my van. I'll post this to our Instagram. Oh, this deer. I want them to come closer. They don't know I'm here. Oh, Paul, I wish you could see this in real time. Okay, I guess I'll stop. This deer is not moving, coming any closer, but oh, they're chewing on the leaf. Oh, so cute. Oh no, they're pulling leaves from the tree. Okay. I just want them to be my friend. Oh, Paul, this is so cute. Okay, I'm gonna stop recording that. Paul, I don't know if we're really gonna ruin this episode. Yes, absolutely. Do you want to ask me about food?
Okay.
I didn't really feel a sense of hope that was actually instilled in me.
Yeah. You looking at another deer, Andy?
Yeah, that deer, either same deer or different deer, is back. And just walking even closer to the van.
Yeah, it seems like... Oh, okay, I'll let you do this thing.
Paul, this deer is just so close. They're like forest puppies eating those leaves. That they're just saying, you're switching to coal if you do this. Oh my God, there's two deer right in front of me.